Hi, this is Mark from the Epic Podcast, reminding you that you're not wrong, you're not broken, you are most certainly not alone, and you're tuned in to the Bicast at bicast.org.
Welcome to the Bicast, a podcast by, about, and for our community. Today we are starting our book discussions with what John and I are very fond of, love, sex, and understanding the universe. With us is the author of Jim's story, Harry Farrell. Welcome, Harry.
Welcome.
It's great to be here. It's great to be talking to you guys.
Oh, we're so excited. We love this book so much. So, Harry, tell us a little bit about yourself. Besides being an author, we know that you are an activist, and what do you do for a real job?
Well, I'm a life coach for bisexuals at Navigating the Byways, a business I started a few months ago, and I work with bisexuals and those who love them in helping just deal with everyday life bisexual issues, which there are plenty of. Yeah, and I also write a blog about bisexuality on Blogger, and I'm Bisexual Batman Fighting Biphobia on Twitter. And I write a column for a monthly regional LGBT newspaper called The Gaily, and the column is called The Bi-Angle. It's a bisexual column, so I'm real excited about that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
When did you start doing that?
Oh, about 3 months ago. I guess July will be my third column. So.
I've seen the first one. I haven't seen the second one yet.
Agreement with them is that I can't blog my column until the next issue comes out. So the second one, I won't be blogging until the beginning of July. And they've got their paper online, but they don't have a way for me to do like a direct link to my column. So I'm just going to wait until the beginning of each month to post the previous column.
Okay.
Awesome. Great. That's good. Keep us posted.
I will.
I really like your activity on Twitter. I think that you are actually on an episode coming up where we discuss social media and use it for activism. So I'm looking forward to that, too. That should be great. So, Harry, we love the book for many reasons. Can you tell us what was the inspiration for writing about Jim?
Well, that's kind of a long story because I had wanted for a long time to write something about a relationship involving more than two people. And so that's what it started off to be. And I was writing short stories at the time. And so it started off to be a short story. And I just one day wrote, I think, two scenes for the short story. And then I kind of took a look at it and didn't like it, didn't feel good. And so I just put it aside. And about a year later, I picked it up again. And I realized the second scene where the main character wakes up and his best friend is calling him in the morning saying, "What happened to you last night?" That scene was really good. And so I decided the story really needed to be about this friendship. And I started writing the short story. It's supposed to be about how friendship overcomes prejudice or something. You know, I kept working on the short story and it got so long-winded and so complicated and I couldn't make it work. And I kept struggling and struggling with that. And for months, I moved, I decided, you know, to basically put it aside for a while, and I moved away I was living in the Virgin Islands at that time, and I moved to the Ozarks, and I started I opened a business and had a child and got very busy and couldn't write for a while, but I really am a writer and I have to write. So at some point, I started writing again. I wrote another short story, and then I decided to try to tackle this one. At that time, it was called Over Coffee. And I picked it up again and just kept plugging away at the short story, and it wasn't working, and it dawned on me, this has to be a novel, and has to be written in the first person from this man's point of view. And I was like, I don't want to write a novel. I've never wanted to write a novel. I don't want to write from a man's point of view, not because I didn't think I could do it, but because I thought I'd get some flack for it. Mm-hmm. But interestingly enough, no one said a peep about that, and in fact, you know, all the bisexual men who've read the book have said, you know, it totally resonated with them. And I even had one man who didn't even realize I was a woman, who, you know, talked about how much he loved the book. So that's been kind of interesting. I just bought it, and my main character kept telling me a story. I'd be driving to the grocery store, and he'd be telling me about this or that that happened to him, and I'd be like, you know, that's all very interesting, but I'm not writing your story, you know. And then one day he told me a scene, and I said, okay, yeah, and so what happens next? I was just frustrated with him bothering me, you know. And he's mm-hmm. like, no, that's it. That's how it ends. And I was like, oh, and I realized I had his whole story in my head. And so I just started writing it. And I didn't really, I thought it was just a really interesting story. I didn't realize till after I had written it and kind of started reading it over when I was editing that it was really a story about bisexuality and about bi issues and bi struggles and not just an entertaining story. So that's kind of interesting too.
Sometimes these things are just meant to be that way. You know, you brought up the thing about doing it from a man's point of view.
Right.
And, you know, that was one of the things I thought of right away. But I had some logic about why it was a good idea you did that. First of all, bisexual men don't get enough representation, for one.
Right.
Also, if you made it a woman, you would have run into, from internally and externally, the whole slut issue. And it would have taken away from the actual part of the story. You know how people label women who are active sexually jump to slut rather than actually hearing the story. And I think that was important that she did that angle. That's my thought.
Right. Well, go ahead.
Yeah, I would chime in that we do write, we have written stories about ourselves in the past, and mm-hmm. they're usually really negative stories. You know, and this is a very positive story. I mean, you know, Jim has his, you know, has his rough times, but, you know, he gets through pretty well. As opposed to like so many stories and books I've written, written by bi men who, you know, like either die an alcoholic or whatever in the end. I want to follow up with a question about San Francisco in the 80s. You know, when I think about, it's kind of interesting because I always think of Tales of the City as the perfect San Francisco novels. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a little bit earlier. It's the 70s, but it's a very innocent time.
Right.
Your book really is a little bit later in San Francisco, but in some ways it's still captures that innocent time. And I know that I read I read that you did not want to talk about AIDS or HIV and the plague, but because that was happening then, and it would have been a very different novel if that would have been a focus of the book.
Exactly.
I kind of understand that.
It's inspirational.
Well, thanks.
And provocative.
Yeah. I moved to San Francisco in 1981. I got there right at the height of sort of the LGBT liberation movement. You know, like people were like just reveling in, you know, this new freedom, and especially in San Francisco, right? And I was in here, I'm a bisexual woman in an open relationship, and then AIDS hit, and it was like this just like a bomb dropped, you know, and it fell in the middle of all this beauty and excitement and exploration and the whole open relationship thing. And it became this horrible tragedy. And this, if I had included it in my book, I just would have been so caught. I mean, my character would have probably died before the book got to the end, because back then people died right away. It was so new.
We wouldn't have seen the progression of his dealing with his internal biphobia and coming out, and all of that would have just, the whole thing would have been focused.
Issue. Yeah, this other
it would have
issue.
Been all focused on the AIDS, and it would have not, his internal struggle and his growth and all of that would have been lost on the wayside.
Right, so, and I guess I could have written it more maybe from the 70s, you know, and so I would have avoided it for that more realistically that way, but I was in San Francisco in the 80s.
Yeah.
And I knew the feel of the place at that time. And I think part of it too is like, We write fiction to escape, and so I think part of it too was my desire to escape, and for the readers to be able to escape that horror and go like, this is what could have happened had we not had AIDS. This is where it could have progressed, at least for this character in his world, and let's escape that horrible thing and talk about, you know, what could have been or might have been. So that's what fiction is about, and so I felt like because it was fiction, I could do that, and I felt, you know, I just wouldn't have had the story at all if I was writing about AIDS. I mean, I wasn't going to do that. I don't want to go there in my own head, you know. It was bad enough to see it all around me.
Right. I know any time that I write about that period, it's what it's about. It's great that you could escape it for this novel, because it was a horrible, horrible time for us. I mean, D.C. was another place, a lot like San Francisco, except that I will say that there is an upper class gay male leadership that is and has always been in D.C. and penetrating that world and or being allowed into that world and that part of the world sometimes is a harsh thing, and AIDS didn't really change that a lot. I'll tell you, my block, because DC's, we used to have very democratic ANCs and block committees and all, and my own block, we had to fight a gay couple that was opposing a hospice down the street from us, because that's all that, a hospice was all that could be provided at that point. There wasn't much treatment. It was really just, you treated the symptoms and that was just about all you could do. And like, you really did as much as you could do for people to die with some dignity. I had my own neighbor like fighting this and I was just so pissed off at him. I was half closeted in those days, but like, I gave them my whole thing, my whole spiel.
Wow,
but that's
yeah.
the kind of thing.
Yeah.
Even in the middle of the crisis, that's what we had in D.C.
Oh, it was, that was world, that was everywhere. That was,
yeah.
It was like, the dark ages set in.
Yeah, they did.
Seriously,
they did.
I think we're just starting to recover, really, the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Barely. I mean, there's been a lot done. People are back swinging back to a more normal way of thinking, but there's still quite a bit of paranoia,
Well, there needs to be. I mean, you need to be afraid because it is a serious deal, but it's not as serious as it used to be. I would have just been absolutely shocked if I knew that this many years later, there still isn't a cure, really. Because at the time you're just thinking, 10 years, 15 years, this is all going to be behind us, even sooner. And it's just, of course, appalling the way it was handled from the start by, our government and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
So here we are.
Yeah. Well, and now we.
Yeah. And that paranoia about the disease itself, yes, that is well founded. I think what I'm referring to is all of the misconceptions that.
Oh,
abounded yeah. so badly.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. People still don't understand.
Yeah, people still don't think that. People still think that. Hi, Bob. That is, bisexuals did that.
The bigger problem now is other STDs too. And that's why there's all this controversy about PrEP, which is the daily prophylactic. It doesn't protect you against anything but HIV, and we're seeing more and more sexually transmitted diseases within the gay and bisexual communities, and that education isn't getting done very well. Condoms
right,
are
yeah.
still the best thing you can use if you're having...
People still don't want to use them. Yeah, I remember in San Francisco before the whole AIDS thing really exploded. It was there, but nobody even realized it was a sexually transmitted disease at first, and I didn't even really know about it. But I remember seeing posters in San Francisco, we're number one, and it was, we're number one in STD. it was trying to get people to, do something about it. And,
right.
I kind of try to touch on that in the novel, at least give a nod to, yes, this was happening. I have one character, talk about all the STDs
right.
he had. So I like sort of show, I kind of wrote the novel kind of as if AIDS is on the horizon. So,
So Derek, he's a great character.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
I kind of modeled him after a couple of different people I know, just for the impetus of creating the character. He's nothing like either of those people, but just this very closed down, very male kind of guy who's, you know, homophobic. So Derek came very alive for me. And I know that, you know, people talk about me writing a sequel, and I really don't think I will, partially because of the AIDS thing. I think it would be really hard to go on, I don't know, for me to continue to say it didn't happen or didn't exist.
Yeah.
But also, I just think Jim's story is Jim's story, but I did kind of mess around for a little bit with the sequel, and it was funny because Derek started talking to me one day. Like, Jim was always talking to me, right? And all of a sudden, Derek started telling me, and I kind of have some idea, you know, if I did write a sequel, it would be from Derek's point of view, and it would talk about Derek's childhood and everything, and I have some idea about what his childhood was like and how he ended up being this person that he became. So, but I don't imagine I'm going to write that, but never say never. So,
okay, well, if you do, I will read it.
Yeah, I will too. I always imagine the story can, you know, being picked back up about, you know, 20 years later, 25 years later.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I did. I have to take that out because that is a spoiler.
Yeah, we're trying to keep spoilers out.
Yeah. Sorry.
You didn't say Derek, but it kind of sounded like it. So, yeah.
Yeah. No, I'll take it out because, you know, I got excited about the book.
That's okay. Good. It's good to get excited.
Well, so let's start back up. I'm to the question about the hardcover. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead, though. I guess because I just had something I thought of. But.
You can do it.
Oh, well, I was wanted to talk. We talked about the great inspirational part of the book and, you know, how informative it is and what a great warm message it is, you know, for the male bisexual, you know, giving hope. Also, it's pretty provocative. And I enjoyed that part, not because it was like in your face porn, because I don't enjoy that very often. No. What I enjoyed about it was the sensuality of it. It was the experiences they had that we've all experienced in our intimate times, but for me, never had words for. And, you know, and you included a lot about, well, odor, really. I think I have this crazy notion about bisexuals, but I think it has more to do with the fact that I was a nurse. I'm very in tune to that, into odors and how they play into a situation and people. And you included that, and it brought some great word pictures for me. And it was very relatable. I loved it.
Oh, good. Well, I do want, you know, you reminded me of something I wanted to say. And, like, part of the whole business of writing it from, you know, it's about a man and writing it from the male point of view. And the reason why I felt like I could pull that off is because even though my character's, you know, in a lot of ways very masculine, he's also very androgynous. And I'm very androgynous, and like we're talking about, like I'm a bisexual androgynous woman, and he's a bisexual androgynous man, like personality-wise, anyway. And so I just, for me, it wasn't that much of a stretch to just, you know what I mean? It was like not that different in a lot of ways. So I just kind of wanted to throw that in there. And yeah, I enjoyed writing the sex scenes because it's hard to do, and I feel like I really pulled it off. You know, sometimes you're reading other books and they like to just skip right over it or, you know, or it gets all like icky, you know, and you're going, I don't want to see that.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I enjoyed being able to do what I'd like to read, which is, you know, sex scenes that work. I mean, you know, I've had several people tell me that. I'm trying not to be too, you know, tooting my own horn here, but I feel like I pulled it off pretty well. And, you know, largely I wrote the novel I wanted to read. And another thing I wanted to mention too was, another thing when we talk about what's the novel about, well, largely it's about bisexuals and bisexuality and bisexual issues, but really ultimately what it's about is very universal things. And I really keep targeting the book when I try to reach an audience. I am reaching out for bisexuals, but I think I'm hurting myself with that a little bit because it's about universal themes of like being true to yourself. That's what the book's really about, and about love and about friendship. And so I think, you know, anybody can read this book and relate to it. You know, you don't have to be bisexual, even care about bisexuals, but just the internal struggles of trying to do the right thing is something people can relate to on, you know, no matter who they are.
Have to agree with you on that. That's kind of how I came away with
Lynette and I read this as an electronic book, but we got excited to hear that you're going to be publishing it using Dead Trees really soon. Can you talk about that?
Yeah.
This is one book I want my partner to read. She doesn't like to read on screen. So not only because Jim reminds me a lot of me, I'm about the same age, different coasts, but very similar experiences. And the other thing is that our oldest son's a physics major. So there's an awful lot about how physics people think in that book.
Well, I found it really interesting that, you know, that you think I pulled that off too, because I'm not a physics major. But you know, I've looked at the book and I've looked at how many places I do include, like, how he thinks. And I've always been interested in physics. For years I said if I went back to college, I would major in physics. And actually, I think partially the reason why I made him a physics major is because, the Derek character, when I said he was modeled after a couple of people I knew, one of them was a physics major. Mm-hmm. You know, he was this homophobic physics major living in San Francisco. And it was like, he lived right off of Castro Street. It was hysterical. He was afraid his cat was going to get raped by a homosexual cat or something, you know. So I think that's the main reason, but also because I always have been kind of interested in physics. So, and I've read some stuff about physics, and I wanted to make the book authentic. I guess I really did pull that off too. I'd be really interested to hear what your son thinks. If he thinks I pulled that off. That's interesting too, that it resonates with your family on more than one level.
Yes.
So anyway, about the dead tree thing.
Yeah.
The print version, well, I really, you know, going ahead and publishing a book, I kept hearing that. I guess the ebook seemed like an easier thing to do initially. And I live in the Ozarks and I'm really out of touch with the world, I think, on so many levels a lot of times. And so I really don't know how much people read ebooks, or I assumed that the younger generation was more into the electronic thing. And I think it's really hurt me not to have a print copy. And I know I would rather have a print copy. I read in the bathtub, you know, so, yeah. I think that, all kinds of people, and I was working with a group of young, people recently, on some writing stuff. And I asked them, you know, how many of them read electronic books? And they all kind of said, well, sometimes, but not usually, we'd rather print books. And these were a bunch of high school students. I'm like, wow. So, you know, I really realized I needed to just make that happen. And I've ordered my proof copy from Create Space. It's supposed to be here like tomorrow, I think. So once I look at that and make sure there aren't any major mistakes, I had some typos in the ebook, and I thought I had gotten all those, but there they were. So I really spent a lot of time proofing and proofing and proofing. I've fixed the ebook now. It doesn't have those typos anymore. So depending on whether or not I need to make many changes, that should be available, I'm thinking, within the next 2 to 3 weeks. So I'll make sure everybody knows about it when it happens.
Great.
Please do. I have to agree about the ebooks. They're great for when you're traveling and you don't have much room. But I would really much prefer to have and feel and you know, smell a book and hold it.
Yeah.
Rather than an ebook. And the screens are hard for me to read.
Yeah, and there, you know, a print book's on your bookshelf, and you can always just grab it and look.
Yeah,
you know, yeah, it's a different deal, and I'm glad to see that it's still surviving very well.
We're looking forward to having the book.
I'll tell you personally, I read now a lot on ebook. I have a tablet and a phone that I use for reading. And when I really got into it, I always read some electronic books going way, way back, even before it was a thing. Where I really got into it was when my son was sick, and it was nice to have a whole bunch of books in one space to be able to go through, because you spend a lot of time in waiting rooms and in hospitals just sitting there and having all those books to read is really nice, instead of having to carry around a couple physical books. You know, as long as your phone or your tablet is available to you, you've got all of your book collection. So, you know, there's good on both sides.
Yeah. That's when I use it, is when I'm traveling, because I usually have way too much other stuff to carry with me. So, all of the links for Harry's blog and her Twitter account and her books on and her book on Amazon. Books. And what else?
I want to talk about I am working on another book. It's not a sequel, but I do have another novel. So I want to talk about that at some point. But yeah, the website.
Okay. Well, let's do that. Let's talk about your book and then I'll come back to that.
Okay. Well, I'm working on another novel. It's called The Man with the Camera, and sort of the subtitle is Bonita versus Ivan Ross the Man and the Monkey Go Round. It's a very different book from Love, Sex, and Understanding the Universe. There are several bisexual characters in it, mostly women, but it's not really about bisexuality except for in a very subtle way. It also touches a bit on polyamory, but it's more fun and more light, and it takes place partially in the Caribbean, which is where I grew up. And there's a Rasta and a monkey and a lot of mystery and puzzles to be solved. It's written in the third person and with multiple main characters. And I'm kind of most of the way through the first draft on that, but I do a lot of editing. It takes me a long time. I wrote Jim's story over a whole bunch of years. And then I let it sit in a drawer for a long time. And, actually, one thing that's kind of interesting about Love, Sex, and Understanding the Universe is the very last chapter was written 15 years after I wrote the rest of that book. The second to last chapter was the end of the story. And then when I re-edited it for like the 100th time, 15 years after I'd kind of let it been, or it's been about 8 years since I'd been letting it sit in my drawer, I edited it one more time, and I decided I wanted that last chapter. And there you have the rest of the story.
Well, we'll be waiting for the new book. That'll be great. Make sure to let us know.
Right.
So take your time.
My website talks a little bit about that book. The website is all about my life coaching business, navigating the byways. And it also has links to all my blogs and Twitter account and all of that. And so that's at WordPress.
It is harryfarrow at WordPress.com.
And that's HarrieFarrow.
Right.
Right.
And you're right. That's how you spell your name.
Yeah.
Well, we will be putting all the links up for this. Okay, so that go to the website.
Including the links to the Amazon book, which is a very reasonable price, by the way. And you're on WordPress. So,
got a Facebook author's page and a Facebook Navigating the Byways page and a Love, Sex, and Understanding the Universe page.
I know.
We'll pull all of them in.
We'll pull them all in there. Okay. Is there any additional ones that you want us to put in there besides that?
No, and if there is anything additional, it's all linked there on the WordPress.
On those pages.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's my bio on there.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Okay, John, anything else?
No, I think we're covered. I would love to talk about the book more with all the spoilers included, but we can't do that.
I know. We can do it after, but I know. Because I love these guys so much.
Yeah, these are great characters. And these are people that, I will say I love the way everyone is drawn in this, because everyone is really, is drawn human, right?
Yeah.
And, usually with a character like a Carol character, it would be easy to make them less well drawn, but she's well drawn too.
Well, that's the thing is that you want to be mad at them, but you can't because they're just being human beings.
Right.
So it gives an honest depiction of how we all react to things. Because I reacted a lot of ways that a lot of them I wished hadn't.
Right.
But it's really how we really are. And it was important to the story.
Right. We're complex people. And I really, people, when I was reading my book for the first time to my writers group, they just kept saying, you really get into his head, And I said, well, really, it's more he got into my head.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I really, this book is totally, we're in Jim's head the whole time and thinking and feeling everything he thinks and feels. But I really believe that people are not black and white. They're not good and bad. People are complicated, no. And it's a complicated right. world. And I do try to really show all that in the book. So,
but, that's, you know, a lot of times, I mean, I look at it, literature versus propaganda, and literature actually does have a lot of colors besides black and white in it, and propaganda is really about black and white stuff, right?
Right.
And I've read the coming out stories over the years that are just so poorly drawn. You don't have any feelings for even this main character who the story is about, who you're supposed to identify with, because he's not realistic.
Yes.
One-dimensional, yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Well,
you know,
it's interesting that you brought up Carol, because I was having a hard time with her character, and I had actually once been sitting on a bus, and this woman walked on, and I realized how young she was and how serious she was, and that's what I started with for Carol's character, but then I just couldn't get a grasp on her, and then I just borrowed the body and face of a woman I knew, you know, and I just sort of imposed that body and face on Carol, and all of a sudden she became more real for me. I don't know why, because she's nothing like the woman I based her body and face on. They're nothing common at all. But yeah, it's just interesting the way it works. But I wasn't going to let her be this. I had to make her, you know, real for me. So yeah, I'm glad you brought her.
Yeah.
Well, she's really like, and in some ways, the representation of the days of Reaganism. I know so many, you know, being here in D.C. at that same time, there were so many of these young women who, like, kind of made it very quickly and were just real believers. And even if they were, you know, even if they were more liberal socially, the real strong conservative economic message really led them every day.
Yeah, yeah.
And she has a lot of that. She loves good food. She loves art, culture, et cetera. But she has some, you know, she has some of that in her. And she just reminded me of so many, you know, so many women that I was around in those days.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the whole women just beginning to, for the first time, realize they could have their own careers and stuff. A lot of sometimes they got so caught up in that. And, you know, it was, again, the balance needed to be found, but this was in the beginning, and a lot of women were just fighting for, you know, their careers. Yeah.
Right, right.
It is really about balance, just swinging from one extreme to the other and finding the middle of where you need to be or going to be. And I think life is like that anyway, you know.
Yep, sure is.
So you're not good or bad. You're just at a different place. And, you know, I can say that about Carol, too. She was just at a different place in her life right then.
Right. You know? And she just was, you know, yeah, she had a lot to learn. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, she had her journey was still at the beginning, you know.
Yeah.
I can forgive her.
Really, everybody at that age has a lot to learn. I was at that age, and I have, you know, looking back a half-life later at myself at those ages and seeing the kids coming up now at those ages that were like me then, who didn't think that we needed to learn anything, but really needed to.
Yeah.
Well, that's that thing. You get to be our age, John. You realize you don't know anything. You really don't.
Right.
And we never will.
Yeah. You know, and it's a nice place to be, because once you know that you don't know anything, then you learn stuff. I mean, you really do. You're so much more open.
Right, but then you're opened up to all kinds of different ideas and points of view. And yeah.
Yeah. I love it daily when somebody proves me wrong, breaks down my stereotypes, my misconceptions. It makes me very happy.
That's great.
Oh, this has been great, Harry. I really appreciate you coming on today.
Yeah, I'm loving it, and I'm so glad to talk to you guys, and I'm big fans of yours. I'm so proud of what you're doing here, and this is great.
Oh.
Well, thanks a lot.
I'm proud of all of us. I'm proud of the bi movement.
I see so much
progress. It's amazing, you know. Well, this is another thing I wanted to mention is, like, you know, in San Francisco, there were all these three weekly newspapers from the, you know, LGBT community, basically gay community. And I was always reading them, and I kept up on everything for so many years. And then I moved away and lived in places where there wasn't as much information and kind of got involved in, you know, raising a kid and having a business and writing a novel. And I kind of wasn't paying attention to what was going on in the world. And for a while, when, you know, the internet started getting big, I kind of did look up, you know, bisexual stuff, and I found porn, lots of porn, you know.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and I found, like, even when I first got on Facebook, there weren't any bisexual pages besides, like, you know, your standard bisexual community thing that would pop up in the very early days, which was just, you know, it was a non-thing. And when I was putting the book online, I was like, okay, I've got to, you know, I got to let people know it's here, because I knew that there were people who wanted to read my book, and I hadn't tried to get it published back in publishing days because I knew it didn't have, like, a massive readership, or felt it didn't. And I didn't think publishing companies would publish it, because you had to sell, like, billions of copies for them to be interested. That's what they were, you know, planning to do, sell billions of copies or whatever. And so, you know, when e-publishing became more, like, legitimate and everything, I thought, here's my chance to get this out to the people who need to read it or want to read it and who are going to appreciate it. You know, it's been sitting in a drawer. This is a terrible thing, you know? And Then I had to find the people. And so then I started looking again for what was going on on the internet about bisexuality. And here all of a sudden I saw all kinds of stuff that hadn't been there before. But I was appalled, absolutely appalled, to see the state of bisexuality, because having been out of touch for so long, I had no idea that while gay rights were blooming and, you know, everything was turning out all roses and balloons, you know, not all, but, you know, so much had happened for the good, and I had been aware of that. But the whole bisexual thing, I couldn't believe it was like open season for bullying bisexuals. And so I call myself, I think of myself as an accidental activist, because here I was just trying to, like, find the audience for, you know, people who would appreciate my book. And what I found was biphobia, just like unbelievable, and, you know, largely from the gay community, which I had always kind of known it was there from even way back in the 80s. I was aware of it and had experienced it myself, but I was like, this is horrible, and I had to do something. I had to say something. I had to step up. I had to talk back to people on Twitter. And the next thing I know, I think was a woman named, what was her name? Let's see, Lynette, who I first saw refer to me as an activist, and I said, well, yeah, I guess I am, because, you know, I'm writing this blog about biphobia, and I appreciate that acknowledgement, and it's a sad thing, but I really do see a lot of progress in this past year only, where people are starting to respond. People are starting to get it. The gay community, some people are starting to give us a nod and a, okay, tell us. Okay, we're listening. Okay, maybe we fucked up, you know. So. Yeah.
It is getting better. That accidental activist, I like that line, because, you know, I kind of like that, because somebody called me an activist the other day, and I went like, no, you know,
you are.
And then, you know, she told me why, and I said, well, I guess I am. I said, because you're doing work. But there's a lot of ways to be an activist. You don't have to be well-known or famous. You can just be an activist by using your keyboard or showing up at rallies. There's all kinds of ways to be an activist, making your own group.
Right. Well, know? I got this message from this young woman. I asked her if I could repeat it on the Bi-Activist page. She was responding to my latest article in the Gaily. And she said, sure. And I said, you know, I told her I wouldn't use her name. She said, no, use my name. And so I'm going to be posting that on the Bi-Activist page probably tomorrow or later today even. But, you know, just getting that kind of feedback, boy, that really, the reason why I want to post it on the Bi-Activist page is because we all need to see the progress so we can keep going, because there's so many days that are so hard. We're dealing with so much, you know, BS from people and so much negativity. And so when you get this positive response that's so strong, you just go, yeah, that puts, you know, that gives you more fuel to keep going the next day or the next month or whatever. So,
yeah, because there's a lot of people like John that have been at this for a very long time, you know, Lorraine, all of them.
Right.
And disheartening for them. And I think that hopefully John and them are.
We're getting more. We haven't been in this good a shape for almost 15 years. really. It's almost been a decade and a half since we've been this strong again. And it's really great to see. And, you know, most of the early 2000s, Binet USA and other buy lists were really just Yahoo group, you know, Yahoo group list. And people just had a email system. And now we really do have tons of, we've done tons of social media, tons of websites out there, Tumblrs. We have lots of writers. We have lots of bi writers in the LGBT press putting weekly, monthly columns in. And that's really important. That gets us out there. And, you know, I will tell you, we have to remember that when we're getting bullied in these spaces, it's a small percentage of people, right? I don't feel, you know, I see all this, bullying and comments. And, you know, if I believed that that was what we were really facing all the time, I wouldn't be working, getting our foot in the door of the local LGBT center, because I would be afraid to go in.
Yeah.
And we shouldn't be. It's a lot of it is just education. There's a lot of people that they're gonna say things about us just because they have heard all these stereotypes.
And that's
really
a large
for us. Yeah, it's really important for us to get rid of those.
That's a large bit of what I see. I see people repeating BS they've heard other people say without giving it any thought. And when I heard someone recently saying, you know, you can't change a biphobic's mind that easily, but you know. I've seen it happen over and over again, because a lot of times people are just repeating stuff. They haven't even thought about it. And what we have to do is stand up and say, you know, it's not okay to say these things in the first place. And because then these people repeat it, and then other people hear them say it and they repeat it. And now we're all rising up in mass and attacking, you know, articles and tweets and stuff that are biphobic. And the biphobics are beginning to realize we are not going to. I think what happened is, you know, for a large part, bisexuals did not stand up for ourselves because we're so closeted. Now they're seeing, you know, you can't get away with it, and it's not okay.
Yeah.
And a lot of it's just bullshit, you know, or BS, whatever I have to say on it.
You can say bullshit. Okay. You can say whatever you want.
But it's just, yeah, and people are starting to go, oh, okay, that's not all right. You know, I mean, they're hearing it because we are in mass saying we exist. This is not okay. Stop. And we all need to rise up together, and that's what
exactly.
And we really all have work to do together still, right?
Yeah.
That's the thing that I constantly bring up. And I actually, my whole take is that the reason that we're getting noticed and trans people are getting more noticed is because we're through a lot of the major work of the last couple decades.
Right.
LGBT work, and that everything's kind of opened back up again. Everything that's been kind of buried, or we've done, like, you know, as other work that we're doing and not our main, you know, not our main stuff, is coming back again. And we have a history, and, you know, bisexuals have a history within the LGBT movement of bringing lots of different forces together and in and working together.
Right.
And that's a role that we have. And it's really important that we all learn about each other's issues and be good allies to each other, because we have lots of stuff that we have to get done.
Well, right. I mean, for so long, the main issue for bisexuals was homophobia. Because homophobia was so strong, and that affects bisexuals. And so we fought so hard against homophobia. But now, you know, how many gay people don't even know there's such a thing as biphobia, or when they hear of it, think, oh, whatever, that's nonsense, you know? So the whole thing is, like, we've made all these progresses against homophobia and for gay rights or same-sex rights. And then now it's time to, you know, I'm, like, calling on, like, hey, gay people, hello, you know, now it's time for you to jump on board and help us with our issues, which largely is coming from your world, you know? So,
right.
Like you said, we've made such progresses against homophobia. So now there is room for us to deal with, you know, we have these other issues that we've completely ignored, and bisexuals have been ignoring it. You know, everybody else, it doesn't even, like, you know, it's not even on their radar. So, yeah, it's time. It's time for the LGBT community to be more about the B and the T, and it's slowly starting to happen.
It is. We've had some really good experiences. John and I got interviewed on our local community radio station, KBOO, for their program, for their LGBT program, and it was a great experience. She was quite sympathetic and an ally. I mean, it was like, you know, what can we do to help, you know, kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
And I see this more and more. I see this with, you know, working within the gay and lesbian community, people that really do want information and want to understand and be good allies to us. Because there is so much out there that needs to be done. And, you know, it even affects gays and lesbians. There's gay and lesbian work that hadn't been done like it should have been for too many years. You know, youth homelessness, incarceration issues for LGBT people, you know, the race and class, other race and class issues that still permeate a lot of the work.
Age and disability.
Age and disability, and all of these things that aren't on the, you know, aren't at the top of the list. They're on the agenda, but they're way, way down. Broad issues that we're always looking at.
Right.
We're always the ones that seem to be bringing those other issues to the table.
And I think it's important too to point out that just because the vast majority of the homophobia has been, like, huge chinks have been crunked out of it, it's still out there. It's still quite, you know, there are a lot of homophobes in the world still. And so, it's not over even that issue alone.
No, it's still a dangerous world to be anything but heterosexual.
Well, and especially if you're talking about the world as opposed to the United States. It is very dangerous. Yeah, in a lot of places it's...
Yeah, you can be dead.
Yeah, crackdowns.
You know, incarcerated for the rest of your life, and your life probably won't be that long once you're in that kind of penal system.
Right.
Okay, well, Guy... Harry, is there any additional thing you'd like to add?
I think we've covered all kinds of stuff. It's been great. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for coming on today. We really appreciate it.
We really do.
It's my pleasure.
It's been wonderful.
All right.
It really has.
Thanks, guys. I hope to meet you in person sometime.
Thank you for agreeing to come on. Remember, you're not wrong, you're not broken, and you're not alone. You're a human being, and you're bisexual. And we will meet someday in person.
Yay.
Yeah. Yay. Bye.
Bye.
The views expressed on the Bicast do not necessarily represent those of Binet USA or the Bicast crew.
Nip it back.